are listening to WPVM LP 103.7 in Asheville, North Carolina. And globally at WPVMFM.org.
Well, howdy, buckaroos and buckarettes.
This is A Better World, coming to you from the studios of WPVM 103.7 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. And we're streaming live at WPVMFM.org. My name is McNair Ezard, and I'm your host for A Better World. Each week, we take an in-depth look at the people and organizations locally, nationally, and internationally who are working to create a world that works for everyone. And our guest today is a friend of the show. She's been on previously, but it's Robin Lively Summers. She's the president of Indivisible Asheville, and we are going to be talking about Indivisible Asheville and the recent No Kings protests. So, Robin, welcome back to A Better World.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Just recently, there were some nationwide protests, as we all know, the third No Kings Day. I read there were something close to 10,000 people at the event in Asheville. Can you fill us in on what happened there, your impressions, and so on?
Yeah, so we were told back in January that we were going to be listing March 28th as our next big nationwide call to action, and it was going to be called No Kings 3. So we set to work looking at what we had done for No Kings 2 and what we needed to get ready for No Kings 3. And we got to work and we put together a program and an event that brought my estimates can get it closer to 12,000 people, but I won't mince words because everybody's got their own way of calculating. It was as big, if not bigger, than the No Kings 2 event. And again, it was amazingly joyful and peaceful, a true coming together of people in solidarity against this regime.
Yeah, I attended, and once we finally got walking, when I was near the front and when we got near the end of the route, still see the end of the line. People just, you know, wrapped around the blocks. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah, we had to work real hard to try to avoid what they call the it's the symbol of the snake eating its tail. That thing is like, apparently that's a marching term.
I guess with a city with as small of a downtown as Asheville, you have to kind of watch out for that snake eating its tail, don't you?
Yes, we did. And it's you know, it's with anything, you know, you do something, and it was, I think the hands off was our first big thing that we all kind of went, whoa, that was like unexpected. And No Kings 1 just completely threw us for a loop. We were better prepared for No Kings 2 and definitely for this one, although we still are. At the debrief, we were just like, okay, this is still a problem. And okay, yeah, and this is still something we need to address. And oh, yeah, by the way, did you notice that now we need to worry about this? So there's a lot of moving parts, and it requires tons and tons of people committing time and energy to participating to make it as safe and accessible as we had done.
So when you debrief, is it just folks with Indivisible Asheville, or do you call in other groups that may have participated?
Well, No Kings 3 was not just Indivisible Asheville. We are part of several different coalitions, mostly probably under the umbrella of the Asheville Fights Back Network. So we worked with multiple organizations, and we are having two debriefs. We have the planning committee, which we are going to be doing in person and has not happened yet. And then we had a safety debrief right afterwards where we talked about specifically safety issues. That's one of the big goals that we had for No Kings 3 was to actually develop a safety team, not just an extension of our events team. So this was a team that was in charge of medics and marshals and parade routes and logistics regarding, you know, where do we stage water and that kind of thing. Not so much necessary this time because the weather cooperated, but when we have things in the summer, we're going to need to make sure that we have better access to hydration for people, because it seems to be something people just don't take into consideration when they come out to these things. You know, please bring water and bring an umbrella, and please wear closed-toed shoes. That's my big message right now to anybody who's coming out.
Yeah, I noticed some of the monitors had yellow vests on. Not, they weren't law enforcement, but they were kind of gauging when to let traffic through at intersections and then to let people march and stuff. So I thought,
yeah, I got stuck in Iowa City and Rankin for that job. It's like, okay, well, you got to fill a need, you know. It's amazing to me how, as much for all the planning that we do, things just happened and we roll with it and it make it happen. And it, we ended up having a safe and successful march.
So do you have to get permits from the city to march or to have the rally? And was there any kind of law enforcement presence during the march?
Well, we're very, very fortunate that we live in Asheville. Asheville has, the police have been as good as police can be, as far as, giving us our space and not making us feel uncomfortable. We are not permitted in that. We let the city know and we apply for a non-permitted event. So that basically lets the police, the fire department, the EMS, and the city know that we're having an event. However, to have a permitted event, you have to have insurance. And back in January, when we started looking at insurance, event insurance could run anywhere between $500 and $2,000. And then we got into February when we were like actually going to buy it. And within like a couple of weeks, it went from No, now it's 5,000 to 10,000. No, now it's 10,000, 20,000. Oh, no, never mind. We're not handing out insurance policies for political events. So we couldn't get an insurance policy. And because we couldn't get an insurance policy, we couldn't have a permitted event, which means that the police in the city wouldn't close down streets, which is what we had originally had hoped to have happen. There were, this time, I did see some police, and on the parade route, when we looped, when we were looping down Hiawassee down to meet up at Lexington, about halfway through the march, a police car showed up and blocked people, like they couldn't have gone anyway because the street was full of people, but they parked a police car there at that intersection. So it was like, yay, thank you. There's a couple other places I would have put a car, but.
So what have you heard about estimates, crowd size nationwide?
Oh, wow. Okay. So nationwide, there was 3,300 events all across the country in every state, in many, in like a whole bunch of European countries, which I thought was very funny. I really do want to know how the Londoners pulled off a No Kings event. But anyway, so over 8 million people. The numbers are still trickling in, so that might grow. It was, without a doubt, the largest single protest in American history. They're indivisible nationalists talking with the Guinness Book of World Records. So that's it's officially a big deal.
So what sorts of feedback have you heard from the national office or people in other locales?
Everybody who I've spoken to who participated has said nothing but, you know, it was wonderful. It felt so good to be among people who are like-minded, and I didn't feel alone. It has definitely put a fire under me to get more involved. And that's really the purpose of these marches and these events, is to recruit people to more action. Get involved with a campaign, get involved with an organization that speaks to your heart, Sierra Club or Mana Food Bank or, you know, something to help support the people who are being so negatively affected. Organize, join an organization that's preparing for ICE. So that's what all of these rallies are, basically a recruitment tool. The people who organize them, so leadership and that kind of stuff, you know, we all are patting ourselves on the back and saying, yay, we did it again. There was no significant injuries or arrests or incidents anywhere. So the whole concept of this movement being nonviolent and peaceful has not only resonated, but it has been fully embraced. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is a huge, I want to say win, you know, but it's a big deal, because the only way we're going to actually inflict change upon what's going on in Washington, D.C. is by peaceful and nonviolent means. So the fact that nothing, nobody was harmed, nobody, there was no huge counter protests or anything like that, you know, speaks volumes, I think. Mm-hmm. So, there's a collective like, okay, everybody, you know, no rest for the weary. We got to get ready for May Day.
Yeah. So tell me about that. I've read about there's a call for action on May 1st.
Yep. In fact, we're having Solidarity School, which is going to be an opportunity for people who want to get involved with organizing for May Day. How are we going to support those children who aren't going to school and need meals? How are we going to support the union workers who are going to be walking out of the job? So there's a lot of different ways that people can help, and we're going to be doing that training in hopes of enacting on May 1st a nationwide boycott. No school, no work, no shopping. Those three things are going to happen in a big way on Friday, May 1st. And I have to tell you that in all the time that I've been with Indivisible, and that's now pushing 9 years, anytime anybody has ever said, we've got to hit them in the pocketbook, we got to have a boycott, and they've always said, we don't have it yet. We don't have it yet. We can't do it. It's not going to work. We're not going to do it unless we know it's going to work. So the fact that Indivisible is saying, yeah, we're going to do this, it makes me feel like, okay, this could work. This could actually have something really meaningful. And I know a lot of the people within the groups that I work with sometimes are like going, why are we doing these big events? You know, there's so much work and but they're not doing anything. And I'm always like, yeah, they are. Yeah, they are. They're building us to this movement that we want to have happen. These boycotts, these big hit them in the purse moments.
And then there's the same kind of promotion ahead of time to kind of inform people.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the things. The Republicans and the Trump regime have sort of got it figured out that, oh, we don't actually want to talk about that, because the No Kings too, they like pumped it up that we were going to be a whole bunch of, you know, rioting Antifa jerks and, you know, anti-American, and it backfired because we were all not that. So this time around for No Kings 3, there was a lot of, no, we're not talking about that. I'm not worried about it. It's no big deal. It's nothing. It's nothing. It's nothing. And we definitely found that getting the message out with the No Kings 3 was kind of like, why is this not getting pushed out? It was a little worrisome, but it still got out. But we have found that, okay, so now we have to go through our own channels. We can't expect the media and the Trump administration to actually be acknowledging it. It's not that they don't know it's coming. They're very aware, but they don't want to acknowledge it. So yeah, we'll be pumping this out big time, because mm-hmm. We do need a lot. If we could make everybody stay home that day, you know, just pretend it's COVID for a day and just shut it down.
Let me ask you a little bit more about, you mentioned the purpose of the rallies, the protests, is to kind of spur people to action. I read a quote from a board member of a progressive organization in Texas, and he was talking about protests in general. And he said, there's this traditional critique of protests or rallies that single day events don't do much and don't connect people to action. Do you feel like that's still a valid critique, or do you see that changing in light of the situation in our country?
I can't speak to how it was before. I mean, I've taken part in protests my whole life, and those one-offs probably didn't do anything except you know, bring some news to that topic. Like there was a gathering in the at the square and they were protesting this, and people go, oh yeah, people are upset about that. And it probably didn't do a whole lot. I disagree with what's going on now, because these have been systematic, persistent. So, you know, it's the consistent, persistent, and insistent events that are just keep putting this out there and they keep growing. So people who are on the fence and just aren't like, I don't know, pick the latest, you know, insult to our democracy, like the war in Iran. You know, it's like, well, that's going to reach a certain number of people that are going, you know, I did not vote for this. I wasn't that great. He wasn't that great the first time around. And now it's worse. You know, I'm regretting my vote. I don't want this to be happening. And look at all these other people that are saying the same thing. You know, maybe I should call my congressman, or maybe I will donate to this, you know, to the school's mutual aid fund. You know, it's nothing radical. It's just a little help to, you know, help those people that are saying enough is enough. Or they're just going, you know, I'm definitely checking my voter registration because I'm going to make sure that I'm going to get to vote this time, because they're telling me everybody's trying to cut out my vote because of the SAVE Act or whatever. So I do not feel that in this time, these one-offs are not effective at bringing people out, because they're not one-offs. And I've been saying this since we got to No Kings, and then we got to Hands Off, and then we went to No Kings. I'm like, okay, I see what's happening. We're going to be doing this every 3 to 4 months. Mm-hmm. And now it's almost turning into every month, because we have May Day, and then they're going to be doing something for Flag Day because of Trump's birthday finagling, shenanigans, you know, and then we have our 250th celebration, centennial or sesquicentennial, something like that.
Sure.
One of those words. Yeah, these things are not just one-offs. They're in a series, and then the series is growing. And because it is growing, that means more people are hearing about it. More people are paying attention to what it is. A little bit of FOMO is probably coming into it, too. People are going to go, yeah, well, you know, I want to go see what this is all about because I'm not happy with what's going on. So I disagree with that statement, at least in this time period.
If you just joined us, you're listening to a conversation with Robin Lively Summers. She's the president of Indivisible Asheville. And you're listening to us on A Better World at 103.7 WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina. All it is. Okay, that's Oliver Anthony singing Rich Men North of Richmond. And our guest today on A Better World is Robin Lively Summers, president of Indivisible Asheville, and we've been talking about the No Kings rallies. Robin, as I think about No Kings protests, I think also back to the protests during like the Arab Spring that were in, especially in Cairo in 2011, the Egyptian Revolution, as it's also called. Lasted for 18 days. People were in Tahrir Square day after day, night after night, overcoming violent crackdowns, really, to end Mubarak's 30-year rule. Unfortunately, it ended with military suppression and violence. But is this the type of fortitude that protests need day after day to see results? And if so, I personally doubt most people in the U.S. have that stamina for it. What's your thoughts about that?
I don't know. Look at Minnesota. I mean, look at Minneapolis. They're still fighting. So I don't know. The outrage of what ICE is doing in our communities, I think that there's a lot of resistance going on that people aren't aware of. It's not as big and or as violent as what happened during the Arab Spring. You know, we're having violence done upon us, but right now Trump has not declared martial law. He called out National Guard, but we never gave him anything that they could act on. And I think in America, just blatantly just coming out and attacking for carrying a sign is going to have such dire repercussions across the country that I don't think they have the balls to do that. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong. To be honest with you, 2 years ago, I said that, you know, we'd be under martial law by the end of last summer. So here we are a year later, and that hasn't happened. Not that I don't think they're discussing it or that it's not a possibility, but it hasn't happened yet. Mm-hmm. I think that the protest movement that we have going on in our country right now has got a lot of really savvy people who are working in collaboration with each other. So it's not just one group it's not just a bunch of young people that are saying, you know, I don't want to go to war. It's not just one group of people saying, don't touch my Social Security. It's all of the above. So all of these different groups are working together, and that coordination is really making a difference as to the methodical steps that are being taken. Like I said earlier, Indivisible telling everybody, nope, not time for a boycott. Nope, not time for a general strike. Nope, we don't have the numbers. Now we have the numbers. So that takes a level of expertise, understanding, analysis, and coordination to be able to have that determination. So I feel like, some of us have been at this for, you know, a long time, 10 years with his first election. So I feel like that amount of time has definitely led us to being more focused and less reactionary than what happened during the Arab Spring. That really was it just happened organically. There it is. Mm-hmm. It was an organic thing that just happened, and they kind of ran with it, but it really wasn't premeditated. It was just a boiling point, and they stuck it out for that long. But, you know, when you have people waving guns in your faces, it's really hard to stick it out.
You talked earlier about the purpose of the rallies is to kind of spur people to action. And you mentioned about joining groups that help the less fortunate and so on. And you also mentioned about, you know, reaching out to politicians. I guess I'm interested in seeing what your thoughts a bit more about how to turn momentum into change. Do you feel like politicians listen to people these days?
Depends on which kind of politician. I do feel like there are so many ways that you can move this country back towards a better democracy. And the most fundamental one is voting. And then finding a cause that you're passionate about that promotes justice and promotes democracy, a democracy that serves all of us, not just a certain few. But I do know that all congressmen, all senators, state and federal level, they have somebody in their office whose job it is to note down phone calls, emails, texts, whatever formats they're using, comments on Facebook, whatever. They keep track of the yays and the nays, which is why I'm always telling people, you are counted in those opinions. Now, the question is whether they're going to take that mathematical information and make a decision based on whether they're going to keep their job or they're going to do what the people want them to do. And a lot of politicians, mostly on one side, but it's not just the R's, the D's do this too. They may make a political calculation that even though they have overwhelmingly their constituents telling them not to do something, their party or some lobby will be pushing them to do it. And they will make that political calculation and choose not to listen to their people, which is part of the reason why we're trying to get some of these guys out. Because like I said, it goes on both sides, but right now it's definitely the Republican Party. They know what their people want, and yet they still keep doing things that are completely the antithesis of what's in their best interest.
Why do you think people, especially here in the U.S., tend to gravitate to authoritarian figures and vote for them, even when those people, the figures, are working against people's interests?
One, I think we live in a cult of personality, and nobody can deny the cult of personality surrounding Donald Trump. As disgusting as it is definitely a thing. I also believe that the Democratic Party was so caught up in trying to maintain its own status slash funding slash corporate interests. It also was not working for the American public, at least not in a way that was like big time. So for every, it's like, yay, we love the gays, and you know, we've got same-sex marriage, and we're going to protect that, blah blah blah. And oh yeah, by the way, we're going to sell out to the pharmaceutical companies and let them get off with, you know, killing millions of people with fentanyl. But you know, yeah, well, they didn't really mean it. You know, slap on the wrist, they get to keep all their money, but they'll go away. Yeah. Okay. So there's just, you know, well, we have to take money from super PACs because, you know, otherwise we can't play fair. Well, you know, as soon as you jump into that game, now you are serving the people that are giving you money. And that's not me. I mean, I'm giving you money, but I'm giving you $10 a month. And these guys are giving you millions of dollars. So who are you going to listen to, them or me? So it's the Democratic Party just was not strong enough to stand up against what was going wrong. And the American people could see that. It's like, yeah, you guys talk the good talk, but there, where's the action? So with that lack of action, they went with the guy that says, no, I'm going to blow shit up. And then he did. And then everybody's like, wait a second, I thought you meant that metaphorically. So, you know, I think people got lied to and people wanted to believe the lie. I think the Trump Party and the Project 2025 have made it cool to be cruel. And people thought, oh, you know, good, I get to say what I want because I'm angry and I'm frustrated and, you know, all those pent up feelings. And then they actually are living it and they're realizing, oh, wait a second, this kind of sucks. And so, you know, it's people going, well, all right, I voted for this, but it's no better. In fact, it's actually going downhill, and I don't understand why that's happening. But these guys aren't offering anything but what we had before, and that wasn't okay either. So I think people are just frustrated with what we had. So I keep saying, it's like, I don't want to go back to the democracy we had in 2016, or I'm sorry, 2014. I mean, thank you, Obama. You did a great job, but you know, he had to deal with Citizens United and he didn't make the differences because of stupid Mitch McConnell saying no, 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 no. It's, you know, they just didn't have the chutzpah to be able to stand up and put forth somebody that was going to break the system enough to get it back to where we actually are living up to the credo of all people are created equal.
Do you think with the upcoming midterms that Democrats have learned any kind of a lesson, or is it just going to be back to business as usual if they take one or both houses of Congress?
That is really the million-dollar question. I don't know. I mean, when I look at past elections where, like, they put they primaried some incumbent and they put up a Trump loyalist, somebody who was trying to be as Trumpy as Trump was and saying horrible, nasty things, they win the primary and then they lose the general. You know, is that what's going to happen with the Democrats, that they're going to have some firebrand, somebody who's got all these, you know, amazing ideas, and then, you know, they're not going to be able to win in the midterm because they're going to scare all the middle of the road people? you know, I don't know. You look at New York. Yeah, but New York's pretty unique. You look at what's going on in was it Virginia and New Jersey? We got new women governors. So always good when you get a woman in the House, even if she's not a Democrat, to be honest with you. I'm very curious to see. But just to add into that tagline, and maybe we can talk about this as well, I'm not so worried about who the candidates are on the Democrat side. I think they're struggling with what they need to do, and that's their struggle. I'm more concerned with what the Republican Party is going to be doing as far as questioning election results and trying to subvert the free and fair elections of the midterms, because I know they want to avoid a presidential election in 28. They want to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I've got a couple of questions a little bit later on about some of the things Indivisible Asheville is involved in with the state elections. So let me ask you about, in case there's people listening who aren't that familiar with Indivisible Asheville, tell us about it, what it is, how it got started.
Okay. Well, we were founded in reaction to the first Trump presidency. It started as a tiny little group of like people going, what are we going to do? And writing postcards and meeting up and discussing, you know, what could we do? And it grew and grew. We began a newsletter. So we have a monthly newsletter. Carolyn, I'm sorry, our amazing newsletter writer, Carolyn Griffith, she writes it every other week. So she's a hardworking writer for us. We have a calendar, an events calendar, of which we share other groups, activities, anything that is pro-democracy and pro-social I say services, but that's not really what we are, but anything that's promoting the general welfare and the social good of our city and our area for Buncombe County. We began actively working on voter outreach in 2020. That election, we began to develop our way of canvassing and tabling to get out the vote, to make sure that anybody and everybody that wanted to vote could vote. With our practice and with expertise and over time, we have developed a deep canvassing system where we go into the communities, especially low propensity voting communities, provide information about where can they vote, how is voting changed. That we can never reuse our flyers. We can never reuse our flyers because they're keep changing the rules on us. But that was especially during Katrina, we made a big deal about coming together with other groups to ensure that people who had been affected by Helene knew where they could vote, knew how they could vote, and knew who was they could vote for. And we were part of an organization, a group, an organizing together that we ended up, Buncombe County had one of the highest voting turnouts in the state. So, you know, considering that that was during Katrina, right smack dab in the middle of Katrina, that we pulled that off. I feel like that's one of our proudest moments. And with that, we are part of the WNC Votes Coalition, which again is a group of other groups that are interested in making sure that we get out the vote to people who maybe aren't sure about where, when, and how, and who to vote for. Now, we are nonpartisan. We are 501c3, so we are not allowed to work with or coordinate with any party or candidate. But we are allowed to provide voter information so that we can put on various promotions who the candidates for a specific position are trying to be elected to, and this guy says this and this guy says that, you know, now you get to choose which way you would want to vote for the vote. So
have the numbers stayed the same or fallen or increased since the current president took office as far as involvement in Indivisible?
Oh God. We had a steady growth until Joe Biden was elected, and then we had a very precipitous decline. We had lots of people still signing up for our newsletter, so we had a high readership, but we did not have a lot of involvement. Our board shrunk down to like five people, and it was really like we couldn't maintain any real active teams doing anything other than the voting stuff that we were doing. So yeah, and we had that was pretty frustrating, and yeah, just kind of like, oh, what are we gonna do? We're not done. And then Trump got elected again, and everything exploded. Everything exploded. I felt like I had 300 people yelling at me saying, like, give me something to do, and I'm trying to write job descriptions. It was, yeah, it's been kind of crazy. It's sort of settled down now. People are starting to find their niche, and we're able to kind of tap into people and sort of work through the ones that are just like reactionary versus action oriented. So it's very often that we have a lot of people coming out saying, what can I do? What can I do? What can I do? And they are not happy with my call your congressman response, because right now I don't have anything specific for you to do. And if you're going to follow me around, you're going to get bored. So yeah, call your congressman, find a cause and donate money. That was really a lot of what we had to do at the start of this regime.
You're listening to A Better World at 103.7 WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina, and we're streaming live at WPVMFM.org. And our guest today is Robin Lively Summers. She's the president of Indivisible Asheville. And we'll be back with Robin in just a few minutes after this break.
Because they're afraid of the people they betrayed. We march with hearts that still believe in the promises they now unweave. They wave the flag and twist the truth, sell our future, steal our youth. But the streets now hum with liberty's song, for we've been quiet way too long.
We descend
for the dream they sold and broke, for every word the liars spoke.
We descend
for the truth they twist and bend. We won't let the story end.
We descend
for the love of this land, not their greed, not their command.
We descend,
cause freedom's not their toy, and we won't let them destroy. They weaponize the law like kings, turn justice into puppet strings. They say be silent, stay in line, while they rob the public blind. But but the people persevere. Every chant, every sign is America in its prime. From Selma to Stonewall to today, our descent is the American way.
We descend
for the light they dim with lies, for the hope they demonize.
Okay, welcome back. That's Swan Court singing We Dissent. That was released around the time of the No Kings rally in October of 2025. And today our guest on A Better World, Robin Lively Summers, president of Indivisible Asheville. Let me ask you, since you've kind of touched on the elections, I saw on your website a press release, I guess it was, urging people to get involved to stop the North Carolina State Board of Elections from finding new ways to purge voters. That was dated, I think, March 12th of this year. Can you tell us about that and what Indivisible Asheville is calling on people to do?
And it comes right back to it. It's like staying abreast of what's going on in the news. We do try very hard to put out specific calls to action so that people are not trying to decide, well, is this something I should do something about? There's several apps and or, you know, just doing a straight phone call, calling your representatives or your state senators is really invaluable, especially if we can muster a formidable number of people. Like when they get 20, 30, 40, 50 people calling every day on a certain topic, they'll start to pay attention. Now, like I said, that doesn't mean that's going to like necessarily affect their vote, but they're going to know that if they're voting against their constituents' wishes. So that's a political cost that they have to take into consideration. So it sounds so small, and yet it is so huge. When we say, you know, they're trying to figure out ways of legally or illegally getting rid of people on the voting registration, and it may be just somebody's moved. And so their voter registration may have lapsed or it has to be updated. But there's a big difference between going to the polls and it's like, no, you're not registered to vote, or is this your address? Oh, well, okay, you need to fix that. Because on early voting, you can fix that. You can register also, but it's just very discouraging when you show up at a place, especially on voting day, to find out that you're at the wrong place or that you're not registered to vote, and now you can't. So it's those kind of tactics to try to disenfranchise in every way they possibly can people who tend to be the kind of people that are moving around a lot, people who don't have a steady address, people who have just moved into the state. I mean, it's just all the ways that they try to figure out how can we get it so these people can't vote, or we make it so challenging that they have to be super outrageously grumpy to go around to the... I mean, I've known people that went to 3 places during early voting before they could get... before they could cast their ballot, mm-hmm. you know, and that's tenacious, mm-hmm. you know. And a lot of us, I know that back in the day, if I showed up and they said, you know, we don't have you on our rolls, I don't know where you would have to go, I'd have gone home. I had to cook dinner. I had to go through backpacks. It's like, well, fine. You know, so for a democracy, we do a really good job of not being democratic.
Well, you mentioned, not you particular, but on the website, it mentions about a public comment period with the North Carolina State Board of Elections regarding some proposed rule changes. Has that public comment period ended? And I think the two issues that Indivisible Asheville was pointing to was entry of challenge and challenge hearing. Can you kind of briefly tell us about that?
Again, anytime that there is legislation, it is possible for the public to comment. Most people don't understand that. It's not something that a lot of people do unless you're a real political junkie. But it is possible for any legislation for the public to make comment. And there's a platform provided. You have to know where to go. And again, Indivisible tries to provide that information for people and encourage them to do those kinds of things, especially for legislation that, you know, is quietly making its way through the legislature and most people are not following it. State governance can happen quite often, like under guise. And so one of the things that Indivisible tries to do with our various teams is track that kind of thing so we can bring it to the public's attention. I don't remember when the public comment, it's usually 30 days. So we're coming up on the end of that.
Mm-hmm. Just recently, current president signed an executive order that could affect the ability of voters to vote by mail. Are you aware of that? Do you see something like that going into effect? I know it's already being challenged in at least one lawsuit.
Yeah, and it all comes down to elections are supposed to be state governed. It's not supposed to be something that the federal government can have jurisdiction over. And that's usually what the lawsuits are going to be based upon. It's that it's not the federal government's place to tell states how to run their elections. So if states want to have mail-in ballots, it's up to them to create those rules and the parameters by which a ballot is accepted. So in some places, it has to arrive at the Board of Elections by election day. Other places, it can be postmarked the day of elections. And then, of course, then they had to go and tell the post office, oh, yeah, by the way, you don't have to postmark things the day you get them. You can postmark them, you know, a couple of days later. So that's all telling everybody, yeah, well, if you go in there, make sure you get it postmarked, because if your state says it has to be postmarked by election day and your post office isn't doing that, your vote's not going to count. So it's just all those little subtleties of how the federal government is trying to undermine people's access to the polls.
So is all that part of what's called the Save America Act?
No, that is a completely separate thing. That is, again, a federal rule that is benignly stating that you need to prove that you're a U.S. citizen in order to vote. So that means it's telling the states that you have to collect evidence of someone's citizenship. And this is basically directed at poor people and women who just happen to be, you know, have a tendency to vote against the current regime. It seems like, oh, well, of course, you don't want people who aren't U.S. citizens to be voting. They don't. They don't want to bring attention to themselves. They know it's illegal. They're not going to break a law. They're trying to hide from the law. So it's quite stupid. No, it's not stupid. It's actually brilliant, because they are, you know, ostensibly saying, well, you know, you just have to be able to prove that you're a U.S. citizen. Well, for someone like my daughter, who has moved 4 times in the last 5 years, she doesn't know where her birth certificate is. She doesn't have the means. I mean, she's going to come to me and I'm going to say, of course, I'm going to find your birth certificate. You know, it's $15. She doesn't have that right now. You know, and so if she doesn't have the resources to ask for the help, and oh yeah, the time and the spoons to go and track down where does her Massachusetts birth certificate live and how does she get a copy of it and does it have to be certified, and then taking it down to the Board of Elections so she can present this certified birth certificate so she can update her voter registration, because otherwise she can't prove that she's a U.S. citizen. She has a driver's license. She has bills that have her address, you know, and she's, you know, obviously an American citizen by the way she looks and talks and everything like that. She'd have to be a spy to be any less American. It's just an undue onus put on somebody that doesn't have the time and energy or the funds and the means to make that happen. So she's not going to vote. You know, she changed her name when she got married. She's not who she was on her birth certificate. So does that mean she also has to prove her marriage? So does it mean that along with her birth certificate, she has to have her marriage certificate? It's just completely and utterly unnecessary. They have a cure for something that there is no problem for. And it's purposefully to the point of making sure that people who are poor and who are female don't vote.
I hear you call my name.
Today on A Better World, we are talking to Robin Lively Summers, president of Indivisible Asheville. And you're listening to us at A Better World at 103.7 WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina.
We're coping with the struggle. Life is just a game. We're all stuck in the middle. We're challenged by the day. Well, we're put in this position, pushed into the corner. The torment this delivers. One
step forwards and forever falling.
Okay, that's Radical Sun singing Until You Call My Name. Our guest today on A Better World, Robin Lively Summers, president of Indivisible Asheville. Robin, there's so many issues lately that groups like Indivisible Asheville could focus on, especially those issues that are created by federal government. How do you go about deciding which issues to fight?
Oh my goodness, that's a really hard question. If I truly think about how we deal with what has been happening, both in the first time around and then this time around, it really is a matter of actually not focusing on the stupidity and the cruelty and the and just the absolute anarchy that this administration has inflicted upon our country, because everything is bad. I mean, if he would get rid of daylight savings time, I will give him all the props. But other than that, there is nothing that this man is going to do or this administration is going to do that isn't harmful, downright harmful to various groups in our country. And, you know, it's all for one and one for all. With E Pluribus Unum, we have to stick together as a country, and Donald Trump does nothing but bring division. So when it comes to us having to decide what are we going to do, what we're going to do is try and remove and undo this administration. And that in itself is what we fundamentally focus on, removing and undoing. At this point, because they are still very much in power, it is more mitigating the damage and putting out the carrying call that, like, don't turn your back, pay attention. And if you can only pay attention to a few things, pay attention to our newsletter, because it'll tell you if you need to do something. And don't get bogged down in all the minutia, because that's the whole concept of flooding the zone. They're just going to keep throwing as much at us to distract and humiliate and undermine our unity.
Have you heard of any ICE activity in Western North Carolina?
We had a big flurry of stuff happening the end of last fall. And I don't know whether it was Bovino has a home in North Carolina that he decided that, yeah, never mind, or that they really don't have enough people to put the pressure on all the cities that they had decided on, and so they withdrew. I know that we are, part of our May Day activities is preparing for ICE to return. So we expect them to come back. But again, Trump keeps, they've built up this private army in ICE, but they haven't left Minneapolis. They're in New Orleans. They're now having to go into the airports and help with TSA. And I think part of that is like just trying to get people used to seeing men with AK-47s walking around in public spaces. I think that actually is sort of a sub strategy for the coming elections, because they're talking now about putting ICE in election precinct voting areas. Mm-hmm. So. But we have had some, we are expecting more and we are preparing for that. So if that's your thing, please come and join us, because we need watchers, we need verifiers, we need mutual aid to support the people that are afraid to go out.
So since you brought that up, if someone listening wants to get involved with Indivisible Asheville, what do they do?
If you have a specific ask, you can contact us at info@indivisibleavl.org, or keep an eye on our calendar, because like I said, we have Solidarity School, which is specifically for preparing for May Day And that includes mutual aid, Ice Watch, that kind of stuff. There are several organizations that hold trainings and or recruit through our calendar. SEMBRA, SEMA and SIEMBRA are the two specifically ICE-focused organizations that we have contact and connections with. So, just keep a weather eye out. People are advertising for it. So places like our website, Good Trouble, I know, has a Facebook page, and they do a lot of promotion of that kind of stuff.
Just got a few minutes left, but let me ask you about two events that are coming up. One is an ongoing one that people might be interested in. What's the beer and politics gathering?
So once a month, we have a gathering at the Westville Pub. It's very much just a social thing. So we get together. Sometimes we might have an ask, like a postcard writing or a petition. But it really is just a chance to talk to like-minded people, find out what's going on with Indivisible, have a chance to, just hang out with people who are just sick and tired of what's going on. I find it very enjoyable because I have so much time in front of a screen, having to go and check in on things that are written, like newsletters and things like this. It's easier for me to go and have a beer and listen to somebody say, yeah, this group is really doing something. And I can go, wow, yeah, let me check that out. So I do better with that interpersonal connection.
And then the community roundtable, I think it's coming up on April 14th.
Yeah, we have various meetings. We have our general meeting, and the community roundtable is an opportunity for us to highlight what's going on. And again, it is there's no beer, but it is a chance to be presented in person with what we're doing and why we're doing it and how we're doing it and how can you help.
Yeah, I think the one in April is called "The Future of Our Forests Is in Our Hands," which has to do with the time frame, for impact statements and rescinding the roadless rule in our national forests. So if people are interested in national forest integrity, they might want to take that in.
And especially with the fact that we're still waiting on federal dollars for Hurricane Helene relief and reconstruction. That is coming into what's going on in our national forests and what they're and the legislation that's coming up.
Any final thoughts you'd like to share?
I'm just so proud of my community. I am so grateful. I could almost cry. I am just so grateful to everyone who came out to No Kings 3. And I would encourage everyone who was there or who knows somebody who wanted to be there, don't give up, don't stay silent, and come and join us, because there's more.
Okay, on that note, I want to thank Robin Lively Summers for coming on the show today. She's the president of Indivisible Asheville. Robin, thank you so much for being here, and all the best to you.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
You've been listening to A Better World at 103.7 WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina. But before we go, I want to mention that upcoming on a future show, we're going to have as our guest DC-based journalist Melanie D.G. Kaplan, author of Lab Dog, A Beagle and His Human Investigate the Surprising World of Animal Research. But Melanie will be in Asheville next Saturday, April 12th, for a book talk at Firestorm Books from 5:30 to 7. Her book tells the story of her beagle Hammy, who spent years in a lab before she adopted him. The book looks at the story of dog research, why it happens, how the government still requires it in some cases, and how it's changing. So look for Melanie next Saturday at Firestorm Books, and look for her on a future edition of A Better World. This is McNair Ezard. Thank you for joining us, and hopefully we'll see you next time on A Better World. And we're going out today with The Swan by Saint-Saëns, performed by Camille Thomas on cello.
You are to